So first, I will give you some motivations to study this type of Zakharov system. Then I will tell you about the free rev interaction model. So this is how to construct such a Zakharov system. After that, I will say a few words about the Cauchy problem, and then we'll turn to a solitary waves problem. Okay, so the main goal is to simulate nuclear fission by inertial confinement in a laboratory. So there is two ways to simulate nuclear fission. One is to use a tokamak system. This is the aim of the project ITER, which is under construction in Marseille, in the south of France. And the second one is to use very powerful laser. And this is what we are going to do in what we try to do in Bordeaux, in collaboration with the French Nuclear Agency. So we are building now a very, very big laser called Laser Megajoule, and the goal is to try to simulate the nuclear fission in with this laser. Okay, so what is it about? You take a box like this. You put some deuterium and tritium atoms inside. And in your box there is a plasma, okay? And what you do is to shoot the target with a big laser, so laser megajoule, to initiate the reaction between deuterium and tritium. And what to expect is to have at the end of the reaction, of course, a lot of energy and only water. So it is this is the aim of all of this. So, but the problem is that when the laser enters the small box, there is a lot of phenomena that occurs because of the plasma. So one of them, for example, is the deviation of the laser beam because of the plasma. You can also have some what we call a Landau effect, which is a kind of so the electrons is. Are getting warmer and warmer, and so it has influence on the laser beam. And the third phenomena is the Raman amplification, and this is what we are going to study today. Okay, so there is of course a lot of people in the University of Bordeaux who are working on the subject. So from our collaborators from the French Nuclear Agency are Gérard Galis and Radian Belawar. And in the University of Bordeaux, there are several people, so I didn't notice all the people here. Okay, just to show you what happened, let me show you a small numerical simulation. So we try to simulate what happens when the incident laser field enters into this famous box. So we take a Gaussian for the incident laser field. And what happens, so when this incident laser field enters to the box, it creates what we call a Raman component, okay, which interacts with the incident laser field, and these two waves create an electron plasma wave, which has itself, which these three waves, sorry, combine to create a low variation of the density of the ions. And of course, which has an influence on the three preceding waves. So, what I draw here is so this is the initial data for the incident laser field, and after a few moments of interaction, you can see the disturbance of the system. So I draw here the so this is the incident laser field, this is the Raman component, and you have the electron plasma waves. So and you can see the interaction between these three waves. Of course. The presence of the Raman component and the electron plasma wave diminish the intensity of the laser field. And this is what you want to prevent, of course, because there is a loss of energy caused by these two new waves. Okay, so so we have to understand why you have this phenomenon when a laser propagates in a plasma. Okay, so what we are going to try is to write a system to describe this phenomena. So our aim is to start from a B-fluid Euler-Maxwell system. So we write here the Euler equation. So this is a B-fluid equation because one is for the ions and one is for the electrons. So this is the classical Euler system, coupled with, of course, Maxwell equation. So we have one part for the electronic plasma waves, which is written in terms of E and B, and for the electronic, the electromagnetic waves, we use the, as usual, the potential of the field. Okay. So this is the equation we start from. And what we want to do is to make an analysis on this system. Of course, it is not possible to make directly some numerical simulation on this system because there is too much scale involved in this kind of system. So what we want to do is to obtain intermediate models for which we can make some reasonable simulations, numerical simulations. Okay, so we propose the following method. So first of all, we are going to linearize this system around the zero solution to obtain the dispersion relation associated with this kind of phenomena. Okay, so we, as usual, we decompose all the fields in a parallel part and an orthogonal part. Okay, so the parallel part as is rotational equal to zero, and is the orthogonal part as is divergence equal to zero. So we did the same for the electric field, for the speed of the electron. So what I have to notice is that the mass of the ion is much more greater than the mass of the electron. So we will neglect the contribution of the ions in the current. Okay, because we the ions are almost their speed is almost equal to zero. Okay, so we put we linearize our system around this zero solution, and we obtain what we call the polarization condition between the field. So we start with the parallel part, which deals with electronic plasma waves. So we obtain this following simple equation, and of course, when we you can make some stuff with this, and you can obtain the wave equation associated with this parallel part, which reads like this. So VTH is the thermal velocity of the electron, omega p is the plasma pulsation, okay, which read like this, and of course with this wave equation you can derive the dispersion relation associated with this part. Roughly speaking, you just want that a planar wave propagates into the medium. So you obtain, of course, so if you take a planar wave with pulsation omega and a wave number k, okay, omega and k have to satisfy with this relation. Okay, it's obvious to obtain this from, of course, from this from this relation. So we can do it also for electromagnetic waves. For the orthogonal part. So the linearization equation read like this, and of course, once again, you can obtain the wave equation associated with this system, and you can derive the dispersion relation, which is like this. So c is the speed of a light in vacuum. Okay, so first of all, this is the two important dispersion relation. And what can we do with this? Okay, so the Raman effect is what we call a free wave mixing. Okay, and for that phenomenon occurs, we have to satisfy the following relation. So let me start. A dot is the incident laser field. So k dot and omega dot are the wave number and the pulsation associated with this field. Okay, and we do the same for the Raman component. R is the Raman component, and E is the electronic plasma wave. So I will explain in a few minutes why we take this form for the electronic plasma wave. So in order to have a full interaction between the free wave, we have to satisfy what we call this resonance condition. So omega dot is equal to this guy, and k dot is equal to this guy. Keeping in mind that A dot has to satisfy the relation dispersion for the electromagnetic wave, and the same for the Raman component, and E has to satisfy the relation dispersion for the electron plasma waves. Okay, so why do we choose this form for the electronic plasma wave? So the reason is the following one. Well, it's very complicated to give some reasons, so we try to give an explanation. Well, maybe it's not the best one, but our explanation is the following one. So when you look at the thermal velocity of electrons, you can find that it is one order of magnitude less than the speed of light. Okay, so that means that these two wave equations have a very different status. So I draw here the relation dispersion associated with these two wave equations. And you can see that the second one for the electronic plasma wave is very flat compared to the, so I only draw the first branch of the relation, of course. Okay? So this one is very flat compared to this one, compared to this one. So what does it mean? It means that whatever the value of omega dot and k dot, you can see, so I draw, sorry, omega with respect to k here. Yes. So the value omega pe, plus omega 1, stay close to omega pe. That means that k1 can take a continuous range of value. Okay? So I will precise a little bit later this thing. Okay, so let's go on. So with this consideration, so we have to decompose each field. With respect to this. So for the electronic magnetic, for the electromagnetic wave, we use this form. So with an oscillating term, reading like I kx minus omega 2, omega t. Okay, but for the electronic plasma wave, you can see that we only keep an oscillating term like this, dealing only with the time, just because K1 can take a continuous range of value. But maybe you will understand later better what I want to say by that. Okay, so let me sum up the Raman phenomena. So I already talked about it. So the scenario is the following one. You send the laser into your box. So there is a backscatter electromagnetic wave, what we call a Raman component, which grow up in the box. Then these two waves interact to create an electronic plasma wave, and after these three waves combine to create a variation of the density of a ion, which has itself an influence on the three preceding waves. Okay. Okay. So what we want to do is to introduce a quasi-linear Zakharov system describing this phenomena. So the method is the following one. We are going to perform a weakly nonlinear theory on the Euler-Maxwell system, so which consists in the following thing. So you decompose each field with respect to the three components, so the incident laser field, the Raman component, and the electronic plasma wave, like this, and you plug this form into your Euler-Maxwell system. Okay? And what you do is to collect the coefficient with respect to each of the oscillating term, but only with respect to time. So we collect the coefficient with respect to exponential minus e omega p t minus e omega r t and exponential minus e last one omega dot. Okay, we only deal with oscillating term just because once again k1 can take a continuous range of value. Okay, so what is the result of this following operation? So, but for the linear part, all the fields satisfy Schrödinger equation with their own velocity. And for the nonlinear part, we keep only the resonant term. Okay, and we keep only the resonant term. Okay. And what we saw is that a phase mismatch appears like this. So this this brings to the fore two phenomena. So once again, the first one is that K1 can take a continuous range of value, and the second one is that the relation omega dot is equal to omega p plus omega r is not satisfied, is not an exact relation. So to match the resonance condition, you have to add this term omega 1. So, and this brings this fast mismatch into the equations. Okay. So, yes, last thing to say that, okay, if you go back to the electromagnetic waves, you can show with, when you do some computation that the three corresponding components are orthogonal to the direction of propagation of the incident laser field. But okay, it's not very important here, so I will skip this. Okay, so doing that, we can introduce the equation satisfied by each of the components. So for example, for the incident part, the equation reads like this. So you have the Schrödinger equation here for the linear part, and for the nonlinear part, okay, so we keep only the resonant term, and you can see that here appears this famous fast mismatch. So theta 1 is equal to, of course, k1 times x minus omega 1 t. Okay, and you can see also the this is roughly speaking the angle between k0 and k dot, the cosine of the angle between k0 and k here. Okay, you can do it for the Raman part, and the equation, of course, is similar to the preceding one. So, and you can also do it for the electron plasma part. Okay, so first of all, what we have to say is that this kind of method is non-standard. So there is no mathematical framework to justify such approximation. So this is an open problem for the moment. Okay, so what we want to do is to deal with the 2D case. So what happened in the 2D case? So if you look at the equations for the condition for interactions, you can have two curves of solution. One curve corresponds to a backward Raman component, which is collinear to the incident laser field. And the second one corresponds to a forward component, which is not collinear to the incident laser field. So the main question is, how can we select two particular directions of propagation, so one forward and one backward, in this model? So there is the solution we give is the following one. So we first introduce a nonlinear system describing this three-wave mixing, and then we perform a semi-classical analysis on this system, okay, in order to study the amplification rate. So the Raman component is what we call an exponential phenomena. I mean, in the beginning, the growth of a Raman component is exponential, and after you reach a nonlinear saturation regime. So only the direction corresponding to the maximum amplification has to be taken into account. Okay? So what we have done is to show that there is only two directions corresponding to maximal amplification. One is collinear to the incident laser field, and the other one, so maybe I can draw a picture. So this is the plane. This is k dot, which is collinear to the x axis. Okay, so what we show is that there is two directions. This one, which corresponds to a maximum amplification rate, and the second one is like this, and it makes a non-zero angle with respect to k0. And of course, by symmetry consideration, you also have the symmetry with respect to k dot. Okay, so this is the situation in 2D. I will explain how we obtain this, of course, later. What happened in 3D? So in 3D, the problem is completely open. Why? Because in 3D, you don't have only two directions in. You have a cone of amplification corresponding to a maximum amplification. And this means that you have a continuous range of solution. And of course, we are not able to compute anything in this framework, because we don't know how to deal with a continuous range of such solutions. So if you have an idea. Okay, so let's go back to the 2D situation. Okay, so I introduced the semi-classical system corresponding to our previous system. So we add the term epsilon, which is supposed to be small in this system. So the semi-classical version have usually the best one to study this kind of instabilities. So this is why we introduce this kind of system. So we make some computation inside. So we deal with the electronic plasma wave. We make a Taylor expansion on the dispersion relation, just because, as I said, omega 1 is supposed to be very small. Okay, so this allows us to simplify a little bit the equation for the electronic plasma wave, like this. And what we introduce now is the at a linear order in epsilon, so we rescale all the fields for simplicity. So we take F dot, so A dot is constant, I mean, this is a pump wave, and we introduce the following simplified system, which read like this. So theta is the angle between K dot and KR, okay? And what we want to do is to compute the amplification rate hidden in this system. Okay, so the method is very straightforward. You take the Fourier transform of these two equations, okay? You compute the square root of the corresponding equation, so you compute the discriminant. You can show that the discriminant is maximal for a certain value of the different coefficient here, okay? And then you can compute the corresponding square root, and then you have your amplification rate, which is proportional to this guy. So you can express this, of course, in terms of theta. Theta is the angle of K1 and on the different value of the system. Okay, so maybe there is a mistake here. A square is missing, but okay, it's not important. Okay, so the situation is the following. So K dot is collinear to the x axis for simplicity. Okay, you introduce the vector for the Raman component and for the electronic plasma wave like this. You recall the condition for interaction, which was like this. Okay, so you can see that from here, L1 is equal to minus L. Okay, and you recall the dispersion relation associated with the following, with the free fields. So we have used 1 over omega p as the scale for omega, and omega p over c for, in order to just to simplify the, to drop the constant in this analysis. Okay, and so this is the two dispersion relation for the electromagnetic waves, and this is the dispersion relation for the electron plasma waves. Okay, so what we want to do is to maximize the amplification rate with respect to this condition for interaction. So you can rewrite all the thing in terms, for example, of L1. So your unknown norm is in L1, and you want to maximize this under this constraint. So of course, maybe you can do it some theoretical computation, but it is not our aim here. What we have done is to compute numerically this solution. And the result of the following one. So the first result is for the, so we treat separately the both case, so the backward component and the forward component. And so for the backward component, so the maximum is reached for L1 is equal to zero. So this is beta, sorry, with respect to L1. Okay, and L1 is equal to zero means that here KR is collinear to K dot, okay, to the incident scatter field. And it is not difficult to say that K has to have the opposite sign of K dot. So this is why we talk about backward components. And for the forward one, we can see that the maximum is reached for L1 not equal to zero. This gives rise to the forward component. So let's back to this to here. So L1 is non-zero. This means that L is non-zero. Okay. So this means that this this direction makes a non-zero angle with K dot. Okay. And afterwards, the method is straightforward. So we introduce the corresponding component corresponding to these two. Amplification rate. So, and of course, we don't forget the symmetric with respect to K dot. Okay, we introduce the corresponding pulsation and wave number, and we put all this mess into the system, the LR Maxwell system. So we decompose the electric field, for example, with respect to all the components. Okay, and we are able to derive the equation, the quasi-linear Zakharov system, corresponding to this phenomena. So I just show you the equation for example, the incident laser field. Well, this is a little bit complicated, but this is a quasi-linear system, Zakharov system. Okay, so we can write the equation for RR1 is the backward component, RR2 is the forward component, and you also have the E is the electronic plasma wave. Okay, you have also the wave equation for the variation of density of the ion. Okay, so after that, this is quite standard to obtain this quasi-linear system. Okay, just let me show you a simple computation, what we have done in 2D, just to check this our hypothesis. So what we've done is a collision test case. So this works like this. So you have the your small box. You have, for example, here, this is the incident laser field with K dot. So you take the Raman, the backward Raman component like this, propagating counter propagates, and you take the forward component. So this is RR1, RR2, and you make a computation on the velocity just to have an interaction in the middle of your box. Okay, so everyone meets in the middle of your box, and you see what happened. And what we have, so we take Gaussian initial data. We are working with a stimulated Raman effect. So we have to take a small initial data on the Raman component. So we see the 1% of the incident laser field. If we don't say do it, nothing happens. So okay, but the electronic plasma wave is taken equal to zero, and the same for the ions. Okay, and we introduce the angle theta of the forward Raman component with respect to k dot, and so we have this angle theta max, okay, which corresponds to the maximum amplification rate, and we let vary this angle theta, okay, and we are interesting with this parameter we call gamma is equal to theta over theta max, and we let gamma vary from one over three to so it's here to 0.2 to 1.4, okay, and what we can, and we I draw here the maximum of the backward Raman component with respect to this coefficient gamma. So we observe that this coefficient gamma has no influence on the maximum of the field, which is clear because the backward component is collinear to the incident laser field. But for the forward Raman component, you can see that the maximum is reached for gamma is equal to 1, which corresponds to theta equal theta max, the maximum amplification. Okay. So numerically, we are able to prove this phenomenon. Okay, so let's say a few words about the Cauchy problem. So I will write the system, the Zakharov system. So I skip the forward Raman component because it doesn't play any role in the analysis. So I will just present a simplified Zakharov system with the incident laser field, the backward Raman component, and the electronic plasma wave, and of course, the N is the variation of the density. Okay, so this is quasi-linear system coupled by quasi-linear terms. Okay, here and here. And so what we want to solve is the Cauchy problem. Of course, there is a huge literature dedicated to this kind of problem. So it's not possible to quote all the paper. We can quote the first paper of course, Sulem and Sulem. You have some non-local version also made by Bidegaray. Okay, And I can just quote the Ozawa Tsutsumi paper of 92 because it is very, very interesting paper. So what is the problem of this system? If you want to perform an energy estimate, you have a loss of derivative. I mean, imagine you want to make the usual Schrödinger energy estimate on this equation. So you multiply by simplified system. You multiply by E this equation, so you obtain a bound in HS, okay? And then you perform the estimate for the wave equation. You obtain a bound in HS plus 1, but to do that, E has to be in HS plus one. So if you come back to your Schrödinger equation, let me do it again. So with the Schrödinger equation, you obtain an HS bound if n is in HS, okay? But to obtain n in HS here, E has to be in HS plus 1. So it's not possible to make a scheme to solve this Schrödinger equation. So the idea of Ozawa Tsutsumi is to introduce the following unknown, F is equal to dTE, okay? To write the equation on F, which now is an elliptic equation, okay? To write the equation on F, the first equation becomes elliptic on E. You write the equation on F by taking dT on this equation. You keep this equation. And the thanks to the elliptic regularity of the Laplacian, you win you are able to perform an energy estimate on this. Okay? So we have used this method to solve the system, and we show that we obtain a local well-posedness in HS. So there is a second problem on this, and this is why this is it is a very interesting system, is the following fact. If you only keep the quasi-linear part, there is a problem with the LaTeX file, okay, you keep only the quasi-linear part, so you drop the dispersion, and you try to solve this system. But this system is not hyperbolic. What does it mean? You decompose each field with respect to a real part and imaginary part, and you try to rewrite the system into the hyperbolic form, okay? And you can compute the matrix M, and the matrix M is the following one. So you have a symmetric part, but you have a skew symmetric part, okay? So this is why we say that this system is not hyperbolic. So it presents some elliptic zones. So it is ill-posed in the usual sense. So what we have done is to use the dispersion to symmetrize this bad part, okay? And the idea is to have in mind that by Schrödinger equation, I dt is equal to minus Laplacian, okay? So we take some derivative of the equation with respect to t and minus Laplacian. So this process adds some nonlinear term, but they have no role in the analysis. And when we deal with this bad part, we replace minus Laplacian by I dt. And with this process, we succeed in symmetrize this the equation. And so after, we are able to couple this method with Ozawa Tsutsumi method to handle the Cauchy problem. Okay, so final part, now I will talk about solitary waves for this system. Okay, so we of course introduce a simplified system because we are not able to deal with the full Zakharov system for these questions. So the important thing is to keep the structure of the quasi-linear part, which is written here. Okay, we drop the gradient just because it's too complicated to deal with for the solitary wave. Well, we don't know how to do that. We add a nonlinear term just to modelize the nonlinear effect in the system. And so we introduce this Schrödinger type system. And our aim is to, of course, it is easy to prove that if phi is the solution of this elliptic equation, then the three functions written here are solutions to this system. So they are solitary waves for this system. And the question is, can we say something about stability and stability result for this kind of problem? Sorry? Yes, maybe there is a mistake. Yeah. Sorry, I don't understand what you.
It's not equilibrium, but the phase.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. It is stationary waves. Is this what you mean, or? Not really. Sorry. There is no. No. There is no complex conjugate in the last equation. Yeah. This is the free wing integration model, so it comes from the Vaccaro system. Okay? Phi is real, huh? In this, because this is a solution of this elliptic equation. So it's a 0, 0. Okay? So this special form is solution to this system. Okay? And so we have the same equation introduced by Didier in his talk. So this is the same equation for P equal 2, but okay, I will talk about it later. So this system has, of course, conserved quantity, so an energy and an L2 norm, which reads, so Q1 and Q2 are two conserved quantities for this system. Okay, so of course we have some global Westposeness in H1 in the energy space in dimension 1 to 3 for this range of P and for gamma positive. This is a result by, for example, by Kaznar, but Ozawa I think also did something on this. Okay, so if you consider this stationary wave, this is solution of the following Schrödinger equation. And it is well known that this solitary wave is stable if P is between 1 and 4 over n, and this is strongly unstable if P is between this this range of this range. So in the circle, we only deal, of course, with this range of P. Okay, so we want to say something about this free solitary wave. So I just recall the definition of stability. This is the usual one. So if you start near from this this wave, the solution exists globally in time and stay close up to phase mismatch and translation to the solitary wave. Okay, so I already talked about this this thing. So the first theorem is the following one. If you take n between 1 and 3, and if you consider only the first two solitary wave solution, so they are stable, orbitally stable. So the proof is very easy. It's just an application of variational method of, for example, Beristecki and Nyon. So nothing new, but it's just okay. This is just a result. This is they are stable. What happened to the third wave? So for the third wave, the problem is much more complicated because if you look at the conserved quantity, okay, you only have these two conserved quantity. And they are suitable. They are the suitable ones for the first two solutions, but they are not the suitable ones for the third one. So we have to change the proof and to use essentially spectral method to prove this stability and instability result. So the result is the following one. You take n between 1 and 3, and so you can find the existence of a constant gamma star, which will play a very important role in the second. Such that if gamma is less than gamma star, so gamma, if you remember, is the coefficient between the quasi-linear part, okay, between the bad part, which is responsible for the Raman amplification. So there is a critical value such that under this value, the third solitary wave is stable, and above this value, the solitary wave is instable. So we have a restriction on the range of n and p in this path. It's just because when we did this work, we try to estimate the term this guy, sorry, in HS, and we have a loss, of course, of regularity. So it's not possible to estimate it. So, but it's not really a problem because in after that, we prove the entire result by instead of estimated this in HS, we use DT, and we estimate DT in L2, which is more simple and okay. So we were able to remove the condition, this condition. And gamma star is linked, what is important, to a minimization problem, which reads like this, and maybe it is this is the same kind of minimization problem you introduced in your talk. Okay. So let's go back to the final part, which is more interesting. So we still deal with this system, but now we want to compute more general solitary waves, not only the semi-trivial solitary waves that we have introduced before. So we want to study the structure of this system. So what is very easy to show is that gamma star is a bifurcation point in the sense of Crandall and Rabinowitz. So I will go back to this fact in a few minutes just to explain what we call by bifurcation point. Okay, so we address the following question. What about the structure of this bifurcation point, and what about the stability properties? Of course, it's very difficult to answer in the general setting. So what we restrict ourselves to P is equal to 2 in this talk. And you can observe that the first two equations are nearly the same. I mean, U1 equal U2 is a solution of this system. So we are only deal with a two-dimensional system, so which is like this. So we keep the first equation and we keep the last equation, okay, by taking U1 equal U2 in the last version. So now you have U1 and U2, but U1 is U1 here and U2 is the old U3, sorry, for the notation. Okay, so in this configuration, it's easy to show that gamma star is equal to 1, okay? And concerning, for example, the third solitary wave of the preceding section, it's very easy to show this theorem. I mean, this solitary wave is stable if gamma is less than 1 and unstable if gamma is greater than 1. So now we want to compute some more general solitary waves and to see what happened with these more general solitary waves. So we introduce this following bifurcation branch. So phi is still the solution of the elliptic equation, okay? And you look for alpha phi, beta phi, with alpha beta is a positive constant. Okay, so the stationary system associated with our Schrödinger equation is the following one. And it is not difficult to see that if alpha beta satisfy these two conditions, then alpha phi beta phi is a solution of the stationary system. Okay, and we want to study the stability properties of this solution. And after, we will see that this form of the solution is the good one, because we will see that there are solitary wave solution of this problem, but there are also ground states. So this is the good shape of the solution, in some sense. Okay, so the first purpose is to describe this the solution of this elliptic system. So for that purpose, we introduce, of course, the set S kappa gamma of so. I forget to say that. Okay, we introduce here a coefficient kappa in front of the nonlinearity just to make the structure more rich of our system. So we have two coefficients, gamma in front of the quasi-linear term and kappa. Okay? So we introduce this set, the set of points x and y satisfying these two conditions. And of course, we can compute the solution, which reads like this. So you have alpha plus alpha minus, which is equal to this, beta plus beta minus, and alpha dot and beta dot. So this is the different solution of this elliptic system. Okay, and what we can observe is that if kappa is negative, alpha plus beta minus, which is a solution of the system, tends to 0, 1, as gamma tends to 1. So this means that if I can make a picture of a situation. So we have here, if I draw the solution 0 exponential 2 I t phi, which corresponds to gamma I equal 1, if you take any point here, and you can take every neighborhood of this solution, so you can see that you have two branches here. So this is the first branch, for example, and this is the second branch. Okay, this means that every neighborhood of this solution contains a solution alpha phi beta phi alpha phi beta phi. So this is what we say, why we say that gamma star is a bifurcation point. Okay, so this is really the sense of Crandall and Rabinowitz. Okay, so we are able to describe the set S kappa gamma in terms, of course, of alpha plus and beta minus. So for that purpose, we introduce the following curve, which read like this, and we divide the half-plane between this following set, G1, G2, G dot, and the curve G3. And we have the following result. So if kappa gamma is in, for example, here, then the only solution of the elliptic system is alpha plus beta minus. If kappa gamma is in G2, so here we have two solutions, alpha minus beta plus, so which means that you have two solitary wave solutions, okay? And on the curve G3, you have only one solution, alpha dot beta dot. So this is the first result. And equipped with this description, we are able to introduce the following theorem. So if kappa gamma is in G1 and G2, corresponding standing wave is stable. In G2, we are unstable. And we also deal with the bifurcation point. So at gamma equal 1, then this solitary wave is unstable. And if kappa is positive, and if kappa is non-negative, is non-positive, the standing wave is stable. So the proof of this theorem is based on a spectral method, once again. Roughly speaking, we decompose the action between the real part and the imaginary part. We introduce the following operator, and we are able to diagonalize this operator in an orthonormal basis. And after, we can deal with elliptic properties of this following operator. And okay, so this is we follow in some sense the theory of Guyakiewicz-Shatai-Strauss, but by computing exactly the spectrum of our linearized operator. Okay. Okay, so let me finish with the ground state problem. So I remember what a ground state, so is a solution of this stationary system, minimizing the action defined by this guy among all the solutions of the system. Okay, so they are very special solutions among all the solutions of the system. So in order to describe the ground state of our system, we introduce the following curve, which was like this, okay? So it is not difficult to prove that this curve is invertible, and we are working in terms of gamma of k instead of k of gamma. Okay, so we introduce the curve k3, we divide the half-plane in k1, k2, and k3, and we are able to describe the ground state in terms of this subset of the half-plane. So the result is the following. If kappa gamma is here in kappa 1, then the ground state are equal to alpha plus phi beta minus phi, okay? Up, of course, to translation and translation here and multiplication and phase. G theta is the phase rotation, okay? If kappa gamma is in K2, then you only have 0,5. The ground state is reduced to 0,5. And on the curve kappa 3, you have both solutions. So two ground states on this curve. How can we prove that? So in 1 minute. So we first introduce the variational characterization of phi, also in your talk, okay, which is very classical, so it's resolved by Kaznav or Lyon or Perusticki or whatever. And the idea is the following one. So you put A is equal to L3 norm of U1 over phi omega, and B is equal to this guy. And with variational calculation, you can show that A and B satisfy these three inequalities, okay, where L is equal to this. And one important point, I don't have time, but is the you have to compare alpha plus square plus beta minus square with respect to 1, okay, which plays an important role in the analysis. So A and B satisfy this relation. The first thing is that alpha plus and beta minus always satisfy these three conditions. It is possible to show that. So you only have one solution to this inequality system. Okay? The situation is the following. You want to be... So this is the circle here. So you want to be... Sorry. Inside the circle, you want to be out of this elliptic curve, and you want to be above this this line. Okay? So by elementary geometry argument, or you can make some calculation, analytic calculation, so alpha plus, beta minus, this is this intersection point, so is always a solution. And so I draw the situation for kappa gamma is equal to K1. So K1 is this this set, and the solution you are supposed to find only alpha plus, beta minus, which is true, of course, on the drawing. The only solution is this intersection point. But we are able to deal with that and to prove the result. And to how can we, so this is the result. So if kappa gamma is in K1, so then AB is equal to this guy, and okay, and so on. Okay, so of course, this is the same result as before. Okay, and to finish, you just have to prove that U1 over alpha plus and U2 over beta minus satisfy the variational characterization of phi. So this means that they are equal to phi, because there is only one solution. Okay? And with this argument, we are able to deal with the phase mismatch between U1 and U2 better. Okay. So I will stop here. Thank you for your attention.